Good evening to our friends around the globe. This is Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network. Hey, we circle this thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with the finest in broadcasting anywhere around the globe. And now it's time for the Boomerang Radio Show. I see Ann Wooten Taylor, Dr. Reverend Rudolph Demery, and Mad Mike, Mike Ward. All right. Joining us right now is Dr. Sims, and we'll be right back after this. Studio W. Hey, welcome everyone. Hey, this is The Buzz and this is the Boomerang Radio Show. Dr. Sims, she's on board with us along with the rest of the cast and can't hear anything. I don't know what's going on. Let's find out. Okay. I'm not on mute. Hey, Mike, can you hear me? Okay, we aren't getting any sound here at all. And I can hear you. So let's do this.
A little bit now, but it's, it don't sound right.
Sound like you're in an ocean.
Sound like I'm in an ocean? No, if I was in an ocean, then you couldn't hear me.
No.
It's not good.
Okay.
And I can hear you. I can hear you over your app, but I can't hear you over the computer.
Okay. Then we have a little issue here. Okay. All right. Tell you what.
Yeah, you sound very distant.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see if we can get this thing fixed. All right. Let's go to more music and we'll be right back.
I think it's a sound coming from my phone.
No, it's not coming from your phone. It's coming from William.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Everybody else sounds pretty good.
Yeah, you guys sound fine.
Okay. All right. Let's see if we can get this thing fixed. How about that? Okay. Be right back after this, ladies and gentlemen. All right, let's do this again. All right. Hey, can you guys hear the music?
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, all.
Okay. Hey, you guys go on and talk, and I'll be right back.
Say what to talk about, so I guess we can rip William a new one while we wait.
No, I just want to make an announcement. My son officially attended. They had his ceremony.
Nice.
Thursday,
so
wow. Awesome.
About him and, then my grandma, my daughter's twin, she moved to Texas and she's a go-getter, and so she wanted to get out of California. She always got a plan, so she got hired right away to the airline. She's going to pursue her medical career.
Right. Congratulations.
So I'm excited about that. I'm expecting another great grandson.
Awesome. Look at you, proud mama.
They are really blessing.
Season of girls, and with climate change, little girls would not survive.
Well, we have plenty of girls now. We do. I'm in the team when it comes to my third grade and grade. And so, yes, I mean, just three children, my own biological children, that stems from three. So, well, my dad was one of three. He was the youngest, quite spoiled, but. So we did real good.
Yeah. How's his family doing? Doing all right? No complaints.
Well, you know, Susie came down with that meningitis back on December 22nd.
Oh, no.
And so she's been down and out since then. She's still recovering. Mentally, she's recovered well. By the way, you are going out over his app, so anything you say is going on. She mentally, she's fine, but physically, she's lost all her hearing in her left ear. She has an ongoing infection in her lower spine. She has diminished hearing in her right ear, and she's walking by using a walker. However, that's getting better. So, yeah, she hasn't been home since December 22nd.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry. I thought you guys knew.
No, I'm the mind my own business type of person.
That's why I'm alone. Hello.
My son calls me. My son sent me a text that he had to take me. My wife was with my son and his wife, and they had to take her to the emergency room because she was unresponsive. So that happened during the Coast to Coast show. So I sent William a text telling him what was going on, and he thought, as usual, because I'm quite a jokester when I'm on Coast to Coast, he thought it was a joke. And I had him back, this is not a joke, William. I gotta leave right now. I gotta go to the emergency room. So that happened. So I kind of assumed you guys knew, probably because it happened during Coast to Coast, which was a wrong assumption on my part.
I'm glad she's doing better.
She is doing better.
I'm glad she's doing better. How's your son?
Did you hear about all that rain? I'm sorry.
My son and his wife are spectacular. They take real good care of her. We're not sure, because the type of meningitis she came down with, she came down with this very rare meningitis form. Like, you have hepatitis A, B, and C. Well, you have the same thing with meningitis. You had A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. She came down with C, which the doctors at Redlands Hospital here had never seen in that hospital
before. Oh, wow.
So it's that rare. And it is what we're referred to as a streptococcus C, which is a equine strain of meningitis. Well, guess what I own?
A bunch of horses.
Horses. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
no.
We're really afraid to bring her back to the ranch here until we know exactly how she came down with this, because she's probably got a weakened immune system at this point. We just don't need this to occur again. And again, she's got physical issues that she's dealing with and going to therapy for. And also, it's been a little weird since December 22nd.
Did they have to test your horses?
What's that?
Did they have to test your horses?
Well, the horses are fine. That's the funny thing. But we do have wild burros out here and that roam all over the place. And my pens are right next to the road. Well, the burros go up and down the road, and they visit with the horses. So it may have been something that came from the burros, because our horses are older now, and we don't ride them anymore. They don't really leave the ranch.
Okay, I'm going to have to come out. My PC's been doing crazy, so it's getting ready to reboot, you know, automatically. So I'm going to come out for a minute while it does this updating thing. It's going to do it automatically regardless if I respond or not.
Okay.
So I'll come back in, okay?
All right. I don't even know if we're on the radio still. Can you hear us, Mike?
Yes. Hey, can you guys hear me now?
We can.
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, we're here. All right. Okay, just have a little technical problem there, but thank you guys for continuing the dialogue. What a weekend. And we started it off, Friday night. Let's see, we had Red Cup Friday night, but Saturday. And I want to compliment you and Mike. What an excellent broadcast you guys had yesterday.
Yeah, it was awesome. He's a great guest, as well as radio personality. So thank you for being our special guest.
Well, thank you both for your comments.
Educating the audience. It was awesome.
It was definitely awesome.
Even with William.
All right. See.
At the beginning. It was just the beginning.
Oh, you had to throw the first jab, right? Yes.
Well, yes.
Okay.
William.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. So
but
I see.
You don't feel right if I don't mess with you.
Oh,
you
know? I wouldn't feel
your
right.
Your words.
I would have to talk to Andre and see if there's something wrong. If you didn't mess with me. But anyway, while Dr. Sims is, she's coming back, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
I want you and Mike to sort of recap, take the next 15 minutes or so, kind of recap what you guys talked about, because I received a call yesterday from one of our avid listeners, and she was telling me how much she enjoyed the broadcast yesterday and how much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she was saying there's so much that she didn't know and so much that many of us don't know and that we need to be aware. And instead of walking around like Mike said, like zombies on cell phones and things like that, we need to be more vigilant, you know, in our daily activities. So, and I know there were a couple of things that Mike wanted to cover that he didn't get a chance to. So, Mike, I want you to take this time and you guys kind of recap what you guys talked about yesterday. I thought it was vitally important.
Well, you know, Mike has been on the Boomerang as well as on the Teens Talk Truth radio show. And, you know, Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries, we like to talk about all aspects of health and fitness. And I think personal safety is one of those things that, you know, what's the point of being healthy and fit if you get robbed, you know, and killed or something in the process. So I thought it was really important for us to have Mike on to share with our audience like he did everybody else. And he did an awesome job, especially finding out about, you know, not just walking around like a zombie and whatnot, but the training that you give to people, I think is really beneficial. And I was told him he needed to write a book, didn't I, Mike?
Yes, you did. And, you know, I've been thinking about that today, too. I said, you know what? Ann's right. I probably should.
So what would you, well, the thing that you wanted them to know the most, you can recap that for them.
Well, I think the top two things that we covered yesterday were, how do you posture yourself when you're out in public? Do you posture yourself like a victim and a target? Or are you walking upright with your phone put away? Are you keeping your hands empty? Or if you have to feel one of your hands, make sure it's your offhand, not your main hand. I'm right-handed, so if I have to carry something, I always carry it in my left hand, or I prefer not to carry anything at all. So, again, how do you posture yourself when you're out in public? Is your head on a swivel? When people are walking towards you, do you at least glance in their direction so that they know that you saw them, and it doesn't hurt for you to go hi as you pass them? So now you've acknowledged them and you looked them in the face, and you're less likely to be a victim or a target if you do things like that. The other thing that we covered was, what I like to refer to as not being in the dark alley at 2 a.m. So if you can go to the grocery store in the afternoon when it's light out, don't go at night. And if you do have to go at night, take someone with you, you know, take a neighbor with you or your sweetheart with you. Mm-hmm. Try not to put yourself, figuratively speaking, in that dark alley at 2 a.m. I think those are the two most important things, is being what we call in law enforcement situational awareness. Who's around you? Who's behind you? Who's in front of you? Who's to the side of you? Do they look shady? And something we didn't cover, Ann, which I'd like to at some point, if you ever kind enough to invite me back, I'd like to cover, what was it?
I do want you back, because I actually got a text message today from someone very close to me who said that they were shopping and they were stalked by two guys. And at one point, one of the men almost took her purse, but she caught him before he got a chance to take it off her basket. And so they were following, they still followed her to get her purse. And this, I got this today before the show. So, I really do want you to come back so you can, you know, talk to people about personal safety some more, because we only scratched the surface. We didn't get to dive into everything that you wanted to talk about. What would you do in a situation like that?
Oh, we lost you, Ann.
What would you do in a situation like that when you know somebody's, you know, walking behind you and you feel like they're stalking you, and then one of them tries to steal something? It's like, you know, if she hadn't been paying attention to the fact that these guys are behind her, and looking around for them, they might have gotten away with her purse.
What my recommendation would be to get big in not just physical, but in voice. So turn, look them dead in the eye, get big and yell, stop loud so that everybody hears you in the store or hears you on the street. Dr. Phil and his wife were in New Orleans one day and he tells a story of how they were walking down the street and they noticed somebody shadowing them, you know, and unfortunately it was a dark area. They didn't have a choice because they were attending some event. And he turned to this guy and yelled very loudly, stop. And, that person went away. So that would be my first line of defense on something like that. Or grab your purse and use your card as a weapon. Roll it into him.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's a nice idea. Because I would run somebody over with a car if they were blocking.
Sure. And remember I talked about yesterday how a fire extinguisher is a great tool and a weapon. You can blast it in their face and then smack them in the head with it. Well, everything on those shelves at the grocery store, all that can be weapons too.
Yeah.
Especially if you got glass bottles or something like that, throw it at them. Get loud, get violent, make a lot of noise so that people go, what the hell's going on aisle number two? We need a cleanup.
And break some glass and use it as a weapon.
Or just end it quickly and just put a cap in the knee. That's it. I'm not really a violent person, but you know.
Yeah, of course you aren't. Yeah.
I knew William was going to come in on that.
About you, okay? Whatever.
A cap in the knee, uh-huh.
I'm not violent.
Of course not.
Don't mess with me.
Yeah, you're not violent, uh-huh. Okay. No, but on that note, that program yesterday was outstanding. And we're going to replay that at some time. I think that there has to be, and it's your show, and I hope you have a part two on that real soon, because there's so many people out here, that need that information, and a lot of us, you know, that happened, but a lot of things can be prevented. Right, Mike?
Right.
Well, yeah, I'll clean it up. Prior proper planning to prevent pitiful poor performance. And the other thing that I like to say to people is complacency kills. If you walk out the door with your head in the clouds and in the stars and thinking about rainbows and unicorns and dandelion leaves, you're doing yourself a disservice because now you're posturing yourself as a victim or a target. And the criminals know, they know who to attack. They know who the easy targets are. Same thing with your home. They know which homes are an easier target to burglarize or rob. So don't be complacent about your own safety and your own health and your family's safety and your grandkids, Dr. Sims. And, you know, you want all of your family to be safe and hopefully you want everybody to be safe. But again, evil's out there. And
absolutely.
Unfortunately, as Ann and I were speaking yesterday, evil seems to be taking on a larger and larger role in our society. It doesn't seem to be diminishing. It seems to be growing. And that's very concerning to me.
Yes. Well, you know what? It's really something because, I had a visitation on last week. Now, let's be sensible. Criminals, they dress in suits. They dress down. They dress in sneakers and, you know, jogging suits. But I had this gentleman, very clean cut, and I don't answer my door, open it up because I'm single. So especially at a certain time of night, he came to my window and, I mean, came to my door and I looked out my window and I talked to him. He said, oh, And then too, what startled him is because of my ethnic background, you know. And he goes, I'm looking for my mother. I said, you don't know where your mama lives. Really? My place. How much you looking for your mama? Do I look like your mama?
William, I thought it was her age.
You know, you really try to start something. Just because where you at, we don't live too far from each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds like a threat. I'm getting some feedback. If anyone has an electronic device on,
another gadget on, if he could turn it, because I was going to tell him, Mike, if you have another gadget on, you got to turn your speaker all the way down.
All right.
Let me give me a second. Put my headphones on. I had this problem with Ann yesterday, and I ended up putting headphones on.
Okay.
Well, I gotta say, we're talking a little bit about safety, and I read a very disturbing article in the Washington Post last week, and it's it the title, I'm just going to read the title and that'll be enough to I'm sure start this discussion that sparked in my head. It says school massacres are no longer just an American problem. Brazil, which has suffered 11 attacks in the past 8 months, worries that the carnage is only beginning. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
That I didn't even know that, when I read the whole article, these people are actually looking at video, from people posting, their attacks online and they're getting,
they're going viral.
Right. But they have formed their own little groups in their areas where they live. And they look at these folks like heroes. And so, it's sad. This one thing says in the past 4 years, Latin America's largest nation has suffered 17 school attacks. 26 people have been killed and dozens wounded. In the last 8 months alone, the country has endured 11 assaults, alarming many Brazilians who now fear that the carnage is just beginning. And they fit the same profile as the people who do it here in America. They, you know, it goes on to talk about that. What really got me is the difference, between what's going on there and here. They said that the difference is they don't have access to assault weapons. So most of the time they're using machetes or knives or something like that because they, and one kid who was 13 years old is like, he would have hurt more people if he had had a proper weapon. This last time they had a guy who did have a weapon because his dad was a cop and he waited until his dad went to work and got his dad's gun and shot up the school. But it's just amazing to me that it's spreading like a virus.
Right.
And it's not just there, even some places in Europe. I think they mentioned France and somewhere else where they've had, a school shooting. It's really sad. I mean, you know, I was thinking that, you know, this is the only place where this kind of nonsense happens. And now it's happening everywhere.
Everywhere. You know, and something you said spreading like a virus. And there's a thing called copycat killers. Dr. Demery, I want you to jump in on this too. And it just seems like, some criminal does something just atrocious, right? And it's kind of spreads a little bit. I don't understand that. I don't understand it. And something else you said, it's almost like they look at these people like heroes. And
they
like,
do.
They want to get their 15 minutes or fame. And I don't understand this at all. It really doesn't make any sense. I know growing up, you know, our front door, lock didn't even work.
Mm.
It never worked. And we didn't worry about it. We didn't worry about it. Nobody broke in. We didn't have the time. The level of violence over the last several years has, just grown. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing and it is frightening. It's scary. It's evil. Because who would do that? You know, growing up, we never thought about really hurting anybody, you know, going out killing people. You know, I remember there was, several years ago, a couple of decades ago, an old, friend of mine, and he was a friend, but he was bullied in school and he ended up shooting and killing this guy in school. And we just thought it was the most God awful thing that ever happened. And now it just seemed like it's commonplace. Dr. Demery, I want you to jump in, please.
Well, you know, I want to agree with what Mike was saying earlier about how you posture yourself and how you, you know, appear to others because you don't want to appear vulnerable. You know, going back to answer Ann's postulate that she had put out before, you know, on the front of my house, I have a thing that says, if you want what I have, ask me and I will show you how to get it. But if not, prepare yourself to go see Jesus. I will. I will make sure and send you there. But,
I got
you know, the thing is, William, and this is more long, Dr. Sims' line with the psychosocial side of it and the psycho-spiritual, meaning that there are copycat people out there that will do that for a sick psychological, process. And there's reasons behind why people do that, that's right. more in her expertise. But why they specifically, I don't know. Dr. Sims could say that better than I can. But I know that there are people that will do that and will do copycat things, to get, like you said, William, a moment of fame and a moment of glory and whatnot. And it's really a shame, I'm just glad I don't have kids in school no more. Mm-hmm. You know, my daughter's 40 years old, so I don't have to worry about that. Thank God. Mm-hmm. But, people that are raising kids nowadays, I'm just frightened for them. Mm-hmm. And I pray for them. It's crazy. What they have to go through.
The Bible says about woe to them that give suckling, and that means people having children in this dispensation, because there's nobody, the level of care is like out the door. In our school system, it's really bad. And it's not only the kids. It's some of these teachers that got some mental issues that have
not and the been. Parents. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Dang. They are the worst. And then you have these kids who, and I saw something yesterday, and I'm glad you brought this up. I saw something yesterday. How you have parents who bully their children into becoming something that they could not become as far as being successful. And they put all this emotional weight on the child to the point where if somebody fails in a team, say in a team setting, I saw this father who bullied his child and told his son that you go and you make sure that he knows that he has made a mistake. What did this child do? He took a hockey stick and brutalized this child anally to the child died. There was two other boys that held him down while this child just lost his all sense of consciousness because the father was abusing the child. Talking about he's making him better, and then he brutalized the child anally. Put the child in the hospital. The child passed out, and they put him in the hospital. Long story short, the child had been beating his own sons, just trying to make them to be something he could not become. And that's a pressure on anybody. When you say that psychosocial, that's a pressure on anybody. And they work from the young perspective, from the child. That's why I say that when people say, well, let's counsel the child. Yeah, let's do counsel the child. Let's get in that home and see what's up with the parents.
Exactly.
Couldn't agree more.
And what I'm talking about, let me tell you something, and I'm going to be transparent here. Some of the things I've been through, some stuff that, Cinderella. Okay, go figure. Put two and two together. I'm just saying. But the thing is this, and I have family who don't want me to talk about it. You understand? And that's not a good thing because many of them have suffered things, and they probably get mad now. Oh well, keep it moving. I love y'all, but keep it moving. But when a person has to face their fears and things like that, and a lot of times fears make them act out a deed that they've been pressured to do something by a parent or by an uncle or dared by a fellow student. And can you hear me?
Oh, she's gone. Okay.
Oh, it's an emotional. It's an emotional. I'm here. I'm right here.
Okay. Okay. You kind of went out on my computer. I don't know if everybody else could.
No, I can hear you fine.
Okay. And so it is an emotional thing. And I'm telling you, it stems far beyond. They start with some of these children at birth. I hear a lot. Okay.
Hey, Mike, we're getting a little feedback, Mike.
No, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Now go on, Dr. Sims.
Okay, and what I'm saying, it starts at a very, very young age. Some of these children from the cradle are being groomed and abused, and they live in a fearful atmosphere to the point where a lot of these that are sociopaths, if you look at their history, it's not just something they learned overnight. It's a gamut of things that had transpired in their lives. And that, to me, is a very hard nut to crack, because a lot of times they hold things in and they will not expose the predator who started off in the first place. because they idolized, just like this young boy who did this to this other child. He idolized his father to the point he didn't even want to tell people how he was being abused and what had happened, how his father pushed him into such a horrific thing. Well, when it turned to be a murder case, the child thought, because the father was telling him, well, you will not go to jail if you do anything to hurt him. You're a child. They won't do this, this. Well, they're getting ready to try you as a murderer as an adult because you are aware of what you've done. And the thing is this, it's the push that they're getting from sick parents, and it's a gamma of thing. And you know, I love the Lord, y'all, and Dr. Jimmy, I know you probably, we got them sitting in our churches too, okay? Hello. And I have to copulate everything all together because, it is all around us because a brutal parent go to churches, they go to movies, they go to the stores. You cannot separate them. You got the sick preying upon the sick. So, and a person that has, I have someone who's a psychologist, but their level of expertise, and I don't care how many books you study and pass, if you don't understand the dynamics of what is going on with the child or with the family, you cannot just counsel somebody at a certain age. Adolescence is your specialty, that's fine. But my thing is, it's start from the root. You have to get to the root of the matter. You have to get to the parent and find out what is going on in that house. Because parents will lie to your face and they're beating their child breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It is what it is. And the abuse is strong and there's levels of abuse. There's level. And some of them don't get beat. It's that mental, emotional thing that the child will say, okay, since I can't go against my parent, I'll go and get somebody else. Okay. And so they'll make somebody else their prey that even remotely sometimes resemble somebody in the house. And then they'll go and get the weak ones because they internally consider themselves as weak. So what makes them feel better, they'll go and prey on another weak individual that gives them gratification emotionally. Since I can't beat up my mama and daddy right now, okay, I'm going to go get somebody else.
Right.
And it's really, there's a really deep aspect in this that people really need to probe into.
Absolutely. You know, Mike and I, we were just talking last night, later in the afternoon, well after Ann's show, and I was telling him how much the audience enjoyed him, you know, Ann's broadcast. And we were talking about, and we migrated over into the conversation about parenting and doing the right thing as parents, because look at the first influential person in that child's life, like you said, Dr. Sim, it's the parent. It is absolutely the parent, okay? And then next, it will be I would think it will be their peers, okay? And then what are they watching? What are they doing with these computers and things of that nature? And people are glamorizing murder. They're glamorizing these evil things that we are hearing. Mike, are you there? Mike?
I am now, yes.
Okay, great. And yesterday, we were talking about how much influence, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, how much influence parents have over their children. And you told me a story about your son at a very early age. I don't know whether you want to share that or not, but I think that story that you were telling me, I think it says a lot about parenting and what we should do as parents. You cannot let your children get away with things that are wrong. And Dr. Sims, about the parent bullying their children into being bullies, because most bullies have been bullied, a lot of them, what I'm hearing. Okay. And Mike, let's talk about the influence that parents have on their children.
Are you talking about the when he was at school?
I'm talking about the one that you guys went to the store and the quarters ended up in your bag.
We were at a store and getting groceries or whatever we were getting, and somehow the manager brought over a roll of quarters for that checker, and that ended up being in our bag. Whoa. So when we got home, my son was probably, I'm going to say like four-ish, something like that, three or four, something like that, very young. All those impressionable ages, you know, from one to five, that's what develops them as a human being, from one to five. I see you, Dr. Sims, shaking your head. Yes. So when we got home, he was all, oh, look, we got free quarters. I go, no, we don't. I go, whose quarters are those? He goes, well, they're ours now. I go, no, whose quarters are those?
Well, they were in the store, but they're ours now. No, no. And I loaded him in the car with the roll of quarters, and I said, we're taking it back because this isn't ours. Right. We can keep what's ours, but we can't keep what's not ours. And I took him right back to the store, and I asked him, I said, I want you to go back to that manager over there and give these back. Oh, Dad, do I have to? Yeah, you do. So he went back in, he gave the quarters back, to the manager, and the manager, of course, thanked him and all. And then I took him to 31 Flavors and got him ice cream, you know, to reward his good behavior, not his bad behavior.
Indeed.
We have, as parents, we have to dispense both of those equally and appropriately.
That's right. And parents out there, if they're out there bullying their children, then do they really love their children if they're doing something like this? Because they're harming the child, and the lessons that they learn, like you said, Mike, between 1 through 5, those are the most impressionable ages. I couldn't agree with you more. As a matter of fact, I did some research on that. Yes.
But William, most of the parents who are bullying their children have been mistreated as well. You have to look at the dynamics. A lot of them, it's a generational thing of abuse. And a lot of things, if my dad was still living, him and I used to walk and talk a lot. And I call it immaturity. And that's the words I will use for somebody who bullies. My daddy was a fighter. He did some things in his youth that I cannot disclose. However, it was because of immaturity and what he had seen in his lifetime. He thought that is the way it's supposed to go. We learn from dysfunctional behavior if we don't know how to decipher the difference. If you don't have somebody that guides you and tell you this is wrong, then guess what? You're going to pick it up. I mean, look at the stories, the history. People learn, practice what they've learned. It is what it is. If a man abuses or beat a woman, it's because he's seen his daddy beat his mother, or he's seen his uncle beat his wife, and he's been around that atmosphere. And some of you may disagree, but it is a known fact, being domesticated. That's like training a puppy dog. If you train a puppy dog certain tricks, that puppy dog will do it, right? If you don't, then it won't. And then, too, it's no sense of you beating the child of something you didn't train. And then it could go both ways. It could go bad or it could be good. Mike, I'm with you. My son stole candy, okay, and put in his bun. But he kept looking at me while we were in the car. And his eyes was like, I did something. When you know your children, when you watch your children, a good mother will know the demeanor changes of their children, okay, even in their spouses and what have you. Because a mother, there's something about a mother, her sense of perception. I'm talking about a good mother, not just somebody having a baby.
Right.
I'm talking about somebody who cares for the outcome of how their children are raised. Exactly. Now, I could have been the brutal individual, okay, because of my history, but I chose not to project that on my children. And a lot of times, like I said, it's either you can flip that thing around and you can change the way your atmosphere was, and you don't want that projected on your children. That's a mindset that you have to have. But if you don't have it, then there's something wrong. You're going to just project. But anyway, getting back long, I'm going to make it really quick. My son stole something. We're riding in the car, and I kept feeling something in my spirit, okay? And I have a discernment that's very, very high. And I'm not bragging, but I just do. And so I kept looking at him, and that's just not him. I look at adults, too, y'all, Dr. Demery, anyway.
Okay, she just went there, didn't she?
I'm not as old as you, so that's okay.
Well, now.
We'll talk about that later, okay? But anyway, so when I got home, I was putting my groceries away, and I told him, I said, come here. He was walking to his room. He thought he escaped, you know, God bless. I said, come here. I said, what's in your pocket? Nothing. I said, take it out. And he took it out. I said, where'd you get it? He said, from the store. I said, come on, let's get back in the car. And I did what you did, Mike. But this time I went another further because he stole it. And he knew he stole it. So if rewarded him for taking it back, I wasn't. So I had the manager. I said, would you do me a favor? Call the police. Call the police. Take him in the back like he would take an adult. Okay. And show him the ramifications of his ill will, of what he has done. And so that's what they did, and they scared the bejeebies out of him. And he had not stolen. In fact, he's the one who was deemed captain now.
Oh, he's praise the Lord.
Yes, he's the one. That, but had I not at his as his mother. Now, I don't know. He may have did something behind my back. I'm not saying he's perfect. But he sure know the ramification behind that. Okay? But my thing is this, is that, like what I said, 1 to 5, that is such a booming time. Of one's mental mind, the wrongs, the do's and that. Even with cussing and saying a bad word. Him and the bad word got a whooping that day, okay?
Both.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You're not going to do this. And I'm telling you, the way you raise your children, they will raise their children the same. I am watching this. I'm not saying that I'm perfect. No, I have imperfections. But Lord knows, whatever I didn't want projected on my children that were projected on me, I wasn't going to do that to my children. So parents need to learn that. It is what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I tell you what, I learned at the age of 6. The second worst beating I ever got in life was from my mom. The first one was from my grandmother, right?
Right.
The second one, I was around 6 years old, and it's a true story. And my mom was taking me to the, she didn't have a car, so she was taking me on the bus, right? And, I'm on the way to the doctor's appointment, you know, and I'm reaching in my pocket. I'm eating candy, man. I'm just having a good time on the way to, you know. And so she says, William, where did you get money for that candy? Now, I didn't steal it, but what I did, I spent my lunch money. And so she says, William, where did you get that money for that candy? I said, I found it.
No. And,
oh boy. No. Now, let me preface this by just saying, one thing that you don't do with my mom was to lie to her. Oh my goodness. That's the worst thing you can do. Okay. Cause she said a liar will steal. And so she wasn't going to have it. So she got quiet for about 10 minutes or so just before it was time for us to get off the bus. She said, I'm going to ask you one more time. Where did you get the money for that candy? I said, oh Lord, I might as well fess up now, otherwise I'm dead. Okay. I said, Mom, I spent my lunch money. She yanked my little butt off the bus and commenced to wailing on me at the middle of 6th and Broad downtown daylight. Now, Broad Street in Richmond, Virginia was the main place. Everybody was there. Okay. And she, let's put it like this. I'll never forget it. So that afternoon, we were having dinner at my grandparents' house, and I'm still sniffling. That's how bad she beat me up, okay? And so my granddaddy, I don't know whether he knew it or not, or he was just being slick. He said, you know, I was downtown on Broad Street today, and I saw this woman just beating up this little child.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mom said, oh, what time was it? He told her. She said, that was me beating up your grandson. I said, okay, but she did not play. Parents, look, I tell you what, parents have more influence over their children than they even realize. I believe that. Because like you said, Dr. Sims.
Took that out of our hands. The government did this, okay, taking the responsibility now. And yeah, we've allowed them to do this, to take the full charge where some of our sick people in the schools are trying to raise our children. And it's sad because they're setting the precedence for our household, not all of them, because we do have some good teachers. I'm not saying everybody, but they're setting the precedence on how our children's behavior. I've heard some teachers in there cussing and falling out with the children and fighting and bullying. And then the child comes home with this anxiety. Guess what? They are going to act out, or they're going to, I remember this teacher, she was about short as a 4'11". And screaming on top of a cabinet. What she did was she wrote my daughter an ultimatum letter telling her not to write so fancy.
What?
And that really bothered my child. And I know her behavior. When she went in the room and was very quiet, I went in and approached her, and she gave me this little note, ultimatum letter. Well, and I had to really be cool with this because I'm from the projects, and y'all know when I'm going with this. And so I have to
Want
to
go off on the teacher.
No, because I was going to act real South Central. And I was trying to do that. And so when it comes to my baby and you causing that emotional distress, I have a problem. I have a problem with that today. That. And my children are grown.
Absolutely. Okay? I tell you what.
What I did was approach her, William, and she got in my face. She about this high.
Oh, Lord.
And I told her, you might not want to do that. I was calm.
Right.
You might want to back up. You might not want to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. I had to put my, my fist in my pocket, but I told her I went to the office and had her removed from that class because her behavior alone when I walked in was not very professional. And this is some of the things that the children are facing with some of our so-called teachers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, there's another side to that as well, and that is when your child is doing something obviously wrong in school, and the parents are going there and want to fight the teachers when the child was obviously wrong. What message there are you sending your child? Okay, that it's okay to act up, it's okay to be uncivilized, it's okay to curse out your teacher. Are these things okay? No, they aren't. And that leads me into getting into the substance of what we want to talk about today. There are a couple of things. There were a couple more mass shootings over this weekend, whether you guys knew it or not. There was another one in Louisville, Kentucky, and there was one in Alabama last night, I believe, where four people were killed and several were injured. And the one that was in Louisville, also there were two people killed and several injured. So there's so much of that going on. But what I really want to get into, this 21-year-old, since we're talking about cyber crimes, cyber security, and also AI, 21-year-old, Air Guardsman, in the Air National Guard.
Leaked all the confidential information from the Pentagon or wherever. Yeah.
21 years old. Now, number one, how did he get top security clearance in the first place? I know he was an IT specialist, probably brilliant, probably very brilliant. But to get top level security clearance like that and to be able to, now also that is a facility that you can't take in cell phones. How did he get that information out? And more than that, he was sharing this information, in some chat room. And they were impressionable young people. How many of those people are being looked at and how many of them shared that information? And there were some foreigners that was in on that chat room as well. Now, who knows whether Russia was in on it and he was sharing information about Russia and Ukraine and things of that nature. And speaking of morals, number one, when you are in the military and, Dr. Dimmer, I want you to jump in on this. So you're in the military. And you take an oath, especially you take an oath to protect your country. What mentality, what type of mentality, and I want to even look into his parents, what type of mentality would allow you to do something so egregious as far as sharing your nation's secrets when you are held and you are given this type of authority, this type of clearance and this type of thing? What would behoove you to do this? Some are saying, well, he was showing off. I think it's a little bit more than that. And I want to go around the room here because to me, this is a serious issue. It's a very serious issue when you have people that are entrusted with national security secrets and things of that nature, and they decide to leak these secrets out to whoever. Now, we're talking about cyber. We're talking about AI. We're talking about the internet. We're talking about all of this stuff. So if he leaked it out, and in my understanding, this information was out there for a couple of months. Dr. Demery, and let's go around the panel. I want to talk about this a little bit since we're talking about cybersecurity and things of that nature. Let's start off with you, Dr. Demery.
Well, there's age is a factor, but it's not a major factor because there are people that have top secret clearances that are, 19, 20, 21 years old. So age is part of it. I had a secret clearance because of being a translator. But I didn't have a top secret, but I had a secret clearance, which is pretty high level for someone who was a chaplain, But the age is one thing, but here's one thing that goes along with that. And some of the panel, I'd like to hear what your responses are. Once again, some of this pours into Dr. Sims and the psychosocial stuff. And once you have information, information is power. And you've heard me use this term before. One of my favorite theologians, Reinhold Niebuhr and Paul Tillich, both said, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. And when you have that kind of power, that kind of information, it will corrupt you if mm-hmm. you are not careful. Yeah. Look at what happened to our former president.
Yes.
So, you know, you have to really be careful when you gain certain amounts of information, which gives you power. You know, there's things that I did and was involved with when I was in the military. I still can't talk about because uh-huh. of the Information Act right. and things mm-hmm. that I was involved in that I still can't talk. And I probably will go to my grave with some of that information. So the point being is that I think he was a young kid, didn't really know what he was doing, had this information, and he felt like he wielded, you know, a certain level of power, a certain level of, boastfulness. And I think that's what happened. I don't think he probably really intended to do it. I'm not making excuses for him, but I think that he let the power go to his head and it corrupted him, and he really slipped up. You know, because most of the people that get even secret clearances like I had realize how important that is and what type of stakes are at risk when you have that level of security clearance. Because they went back, and I just had a secret clearance. They went all the way back to my elementary school teachers to ask about me, to find out who I was. And, you know, they do a thorough. They know more about you than you know about yourself when you get certain levels of clearances. And if some people don't want to get one because, or get any type of security clearance, because it's really invasive. They really search into your life and they become a part of your life. They search your bank account. They sometimes even tap your phone, you know, listen to your conversations and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, it is, that's why when we were doing a lot of translations, when we were in Iraq, they always have two translators. They have one that does the translation and one to confirm the translator's translation of what the conversation was about. Mm-hmm. So they need to probably do that at some level, you know, even with certain levels of security clearance and certain documents and whatnot that they were involved with. So ending, you know, I think, what happened was the kid got a little, his britches got too big. He ended up being breath and britches. You know, I used that statement before. And he just let a lot of it get, you know, beyond where he was. I mean, I don't think that he really had intentions of doing what he did. I think he slipped up. He made a mistake. And I think if he had to do it over again, he would be, you know, very remorseful, because unfortunately, this poor kid, his life is ruined. He's probably going to end up in Leavenworth. Mm-hmm. Leavenworth is the military prison, you know, where they send people like this. That's probably where he's headed. He's headed to Leavenworth, and he don't know he's headed to the Gray Bar Hotel in the big house.
Well, you know, I tell you, it's possible, Dr. Demery, that he didn't realize the severity, but how could he not? I mean, don't they warn you? Don't they warn you that, look, you're getting this clearance, okay? Guard it, protect it, okay? Yeah. All right, and then also give them the consequence. What could happen to them? Give them the consequences of what could happen to them if they slipped up. I mean, some people now. Granted, some people believe that fire don't burn.
Right.
Okay, but he had to know. Now, I have a brother right now that he's retired Air Force, Master Sergeant Air Force, and I believe he worked alongside of NORAD. Okay. I have a cousin that's retired as a Fulbright Colonel. And to this day, there are certain things they won't tell you. Mm-hmm. I'll ask questions. They say, I can't tell you that. I can't answer that. Next subject or next question. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they will not tell you. And so it's possible, Dr. Demery, that he didn't believe how severe it was, but the crime that he committed is sincere. And I don't think he's going to get like maybe 1 or 2 months in Leavenworth if he goes there.
Oh, no. No, he's going away for a long time.
His life is ruined.
They make an example out of him, no doubt.
His life is over. Mm. You know, his life in terms of being a normal person and whatnot, it's pretty much over.
Yeah.
He will never get a government job. He will never work, any place that has any level of security. I mean, he's through.
Mm. Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, in my old, I'm still involved in that, in the securities industry, with a record like that, you can definitely not get a job in the securities industry. That will not happen. Okay, that will not happen. Mike, you had something to say?
No, I was just confirming what Dr. Demery was saying, that he's done. He's they're going to make an example out of him. They're going to spank him, and they're going to spank him hard. Mm-hmm. I wish that was more level across the board with regard to other areas of the United States and politicians and such. Mm-hmm. I wish that some of those spankings were dealt out a lot more. But they'll make an example of this guy.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Ann?
Well, I agree with Dr. Demery that he let the power go to his head, but I also agree with you, William, that just like with all of us, I'm an attorney. We had to learn ethics. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we had to learn is, confidentiality. Mm-hmm. And so I can't imagine that the military is handing out secrets without at least giving some level of training that if you tell anything that's disclosed to you, these will be the consequences. So, I mean, while he may have had some book smarts, he lacked a whole lot of common sense.
Mm-hmm.
It does sound really strange that he did it in this chat room, and then you've got the Russians who not only know it's there, before the Americans did, but they have downloaded it and changed it around so that it says what they wanted it to say. Mm-hmm. So it's a very weird type of situation. This isn't normally what happens when there is a leak. I'm wondering if this dude has some mental issues. It's like, did you do this because there's something wrong with you mentally, or did you do this in such a way that you were thinking, okay, I'm going to put this in this chat and they won't be monitoring this, and that way I can get it to my handler over in Russia? I don't know. There are a lot of unanswered questions there, but I do know, that the military has their own, legal code and their own judicial system, and he's, I pity him, because he's about to get the full force of that system brought down on him.
Mm-hmm. I definitely wouldn't want to be involved in that. And then you have to wonder, what was the payoff? What did he gain other than notoriety, or other than having because there were a lot of young people there, as young as 18 years old, in this chat room as well, and they looked at him as the OG, the big brother, so to speak, right? And I don't know where they knew he was only 21 years old, which really doesn't matter. But it seemed like to me, he had to know, like, if I get caught, okay, because, he had to know, because otherwise he wouldn't go through certain lengths to get that information out there. Again, you can't take your own laptop in there, okay? You can't take a cell phone in there, okay? Who knows how he got that information out? Was he able to slip a thumb drive in? Who knows how he got that information out? So it is a very, very dangerous situation there.
It goes back to what Mike was saying, and part of Ann and yours, William, is that unfortunately, our government system, and like Ann was saying, the military code of ethics, it's like a sleeping dragon. You can walk around it, you can maybe even tickle it, but once it awakens, and it starts breathing fire,
right,
you are through. I mean, you are basically over with.
Right.
And don't you have to worry about also influences? That it's not good for you to tell your level of control as far as top secrets and things like that. Because what I was thinking about, if you had somebody who was not as knowledgeable or as educated of the severity of his position, then guess what? If you share something, maybe I might be going a little off the mark, but if you share something with anybody, then you can get people to egg you to do this and do that because they're not understanding. And then two, what happens, that person that has this information, it gives them that control, that power. Like we said, power to control, power to do what we want. So there's an adrenaline rush that supersedes your thought process, the rationale. Mm.